You are listening to the Photobomb podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Photobomb podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me, as always, is Gary Hughes.
Howdy.
And also on the program today, back for a return engagement, and I do believe, no, not the first person to come back for a second time, the second person to come back on the show.
Well, probably the first person... No, he's just not that special.
He's the first person to come back live.
Derek was here for like three episodes.
Oh, well, but that's not... Derek doesn't count.
Yeah, he does. By the way, finish the intro.
Oh, well, it's Kevin Newsom, everybody. Kevin,
say good morning. Feeling like, Steve Martin on... Saturday Night Live. How many times do you?
That's
get to,
right. You're the Alec
host?
Baldwin. You are the Alec Baldwin,
of
this podcast, and that we have you back. But there's a reason for that. First of all, you're available, and second of all,
I'm easy.
You are.
You're
a veteran. You know, I like having you on the show because sometimes I think, you know, Gary and I, we're relatively, compared to some, we're relatively new.
Compared to Kevin.
Yeah, compared to Kevin. and there's no conversation about photography I've ever had that Kevin didn't have an interesting facet or tidbit or anecdote or opinion on. So it's always nice.
You know
to
why
have
I'm glad Kevin's here? Because unlike some people, Derek, he doesn't step all over his damn intro every time.
That's right.
You know, that was
he
terrible. Every time he's like, and in the studio we have Derek go, hey bros. I'm here, and Kevin will wait his turn until someone says, "And Kevin Newsom."
And here I am.
There you go.
All I need is tasty buzz and cool waves. which, by the way, for a future podcast, we have to talk about. I worked with Kevin yesterday. I worked with Derek yesterday.
Oh, you hired that?
Yes.
Guy.
We're gonna talk about that. Trained with him a little bit yesterday.
Oh,
so we'll talk about
that
later.
That.
But it's so nice to have you on the show, Kevin. Thank you. Very nice.
Thank you.
Golf
Woo!
Clap for Kevin on the
Kevin
show.
Kevin is there.
And we have a lot to talk to you about. Let's see where to start on this journey. First of all, wait. And enough about you. Let's talk to Gary.
So glad you're here, Kevin. Would you just
right
sit there and shut
bat,
up for a
I'll
minute?
I'll just sit here and shut
right
up.
Right off the bat, we have to talk about Gary because he just finished doing Creative Live.
I did.
So I want to let's talk a little bit about that experience. What was that like for you?
Actually, you can watch it. I'm sure they'll rebroadcast it a bunch of times. But I realized something very special about myself is that, man, do I sweat profusely.
I've heard they keep that place pretty hot.
Yeah, no, it's actually not. I kept telling people that I had a couple of people, friends of mine who watched the broadcast go, man, you were really sweating up there. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's hot under all the lights in the studio. They're all LEDs.
They're like Albert Brooks.
The room was like 69 degrees.
like Albert Brooks in Broadcast
Albert
News.
Brooks, yeah. Broadcast News, yeah. So he was sweating so bad it fogged up the TV screen.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So listen, though, you said something to me. You texted me from Seattle. And you said something to me that I thought was, first of all, I thought it was, I don't know, I was touched by it because that you would even think about this. But you texted me.
I love to touch you.
You texted me an apology from Seattle after your first day.
This is true.
And I thought, and I was actually touched by it because I was surprised that you made the connection that, you know, you had been at IPC the week before when I had been doing the IPC webcast.
IPC Live.
Right,
yeah.
IPC Live. And now
I'm
you're doing this
I'm glad
now
thing. This is about you again.
Yes, I'm bringing it back
really
to me,
really uncomfortable
baby.
It being
Let's
about me for 10
me.
Seconds.
Let's bring it back to me. But what did you text me at the end of your day of doing your seminars?
So I could pull it up, but something to the effect of, man, because I was trying to get you to hang out after IPC Live. Like, we're out of town. We got a hotel room. Let's go drinking. Let's tie one on. And here I am like, come on, Boo Ray, let's go do something. You're like, man, I'm tired.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, I got to go to bed. I got to get up in the morning and do this thing again.
And I gave you a lot of crap for being a wuss. And
right.
Then, but after doing it myself on Creative Live, that live for all day, because you were on IPC Live all day.
Right.
Because Creative Live is essentially you do 8 90-minute live classes over 2 days, so 4 each day. So it's like it's an intense amount of instruction. And not only that, but you've got people in the room that you're teaching, but you're also conscious of the however many people are watching live.
And in your case, we're talking 5,000-10,000 people can be watching.
I don't have the exact numbers. But
still, it's a big number. It's not like there's 200
people. It is in
people.
The thousands. Yeah. I think there were like 6,000-something people pre-registered, and then more than that watch it live over the 2 days. I think it was it's definitely in the thousands, but you're conscious of that. And now that you're worried about, is anybody actually watching this crap? And then on top of that, they give you coaching on your blocking and stuff, which is where you're supposed to stand, because they have lights set up to make sure that you're lit well and the host is lit well and the class is lit well. So I walk around a lot. right. when I teach and I engage. And so every time I would like walk to one side of the stage, one of their, you know, production team would start flagging me right. down and telling me, like pointing to move over to the other side of the stage or back up a little bit. So that sort of threw me off just a little bit, but it was awesome. They have such a killer crew over there. I mean, they're such professionals. To me, it was this really big event in my life. Like, I got to teach a two-day class on Creative Live. In the photography industry, there is no bigger platform in education.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Can we say that? There's no way you're going to get to teach in front of more people.
Right.
You'll teach more for Live, WPPI, Imaging USA, Photoshop World, which we're going to talk about later, Photo Plus, all the different, Photo Kina. There's tons and tons of them. But you'll never get in front of more people than you will on Creative Live. And so it's a huge opportunity. And here I am, like, nervous and excited and just really happy to be there.
And what did you text me that night?
I'm getting to it.
Yeah, I thought you'd totally forgotten.
No, my train meanders a little bit.
He's bringing back to Blu-ray, please.
Just bring it back to the point.
Mary and Joseph.
No, because I'm like, okay, I thought you were off to the races.
Oh, my God. No, I'm not off to it. I'll get there.
All right, get there.
Simmer down now.
Simmer down.
All right. Now I'm derailed. No, and so here I am, and this is big event in my life. It's this huge honor to be there, and the staff is like, same shit every day. Like, it's nothing
big
on
deal.
It. Like,
right.
they don't care at all. I mean, they care, but it doesn't faze them. I'm like, why isn't anybody else freaking out? It was just me. But it was very draining.
Yes.
I've never done any teaching experience, even teaching. I've taught all-day seminars live in person in front of groups of people.
Sure.
But nothing that mentally exhausting.
Right.
So I texted you, dude, I'm really sorry for giving you so much shit about not going out the night after, because I went back to my hotel room and I just...
You were just beat. You're really tore up.
I went to bed at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, you can come home. You can do something like that, and at the end of the day, it's worse than if you shot a wedding the whole day.
It was rough. I haven't been that exhausted in a long time.
It's emotionally draining.
It is really, really tough. But it was great. I had a blast doing it. Lots of good reviews and response from the class, and... I had a lot of people, friends of mine in the industry, watch and tune in to support me. It was really cool. So,
all right,
awesome.
I want to talk about what Kevin's been doing lately, because one of the things that's great about you, Kevin, is that you are a guy who's. I always love to point out that you got your start. What was your first job?
Oh, shooting baby pictures in a Kmart.
That's right, baby pictures in a Kmart, baby.
And there is no deeper trench than that right there.
But that's boot camp.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can survive that,
yeah.
you can survive anything, right?
Absolutely.
But you have seen the industry change a lot, and you have worked and sustained your business mm-hmm. through numerous industry changes, the advent of digital, et cetera. And you have gone from a person who probably in the beginning was mostly portraits and in-studio portraits and a lot of weddings.
I did over 800 weddings over a 22-year period before I gave them up about 8 years ago.
Let me talk about that real quick. I want to ask you, because I wanted to ask you about that. Walk me through, you're a wedding photographer in 1978.
Well, okay, 1985.
Okay.
Jesus,
1985.
Not that old.
Yeah.
And
1978, it was still in Kmart.
What was Studio 54 like, Kevin?
Yes. 1985. Walk me through, like, the wedding, shooting a wedding on film. Because, you know, there are a lot of people who listen to this podcast who have no concept of what it's like to shoot with film.
I never shot film.
Right.
So, not professionally.
So what would it be like in 1985? You're going to shoot a wedding with film. How does it differ from what you would do today? What was that experience like?
Well, you had a mental shot list of what you knew the brides typically purchased and designed their albums with. So you went into most weddings with the same basic framework, and then you kind of, you know, look for opportunities outside of that framework. But I would shoot a wedding with, you know, 200 images. You know, I'd take...
And that was probably even a lot.
Well, some weddings I would do with less than 60 shots. I mean, there was I had a 60-shot package, you know, 3 hours.
So when they hired you,
yeah.
it was you're hiring me for X amount of time and X amount of proofs?
I would guarantee them a certain number of previews that were included in the preview album as part of their package.
So to get 60 images to show the client, how many exposures would you take?
80.
80. Wow. So that's, that's a 75%.
Yeah.
Of your pictures are good. I know I don't shoot.
No, and it's more like 33%
yeah.
now. I would say 2/3 of what I shoot gets dumped.
So now,
but you know, the bride, you know, I'm shooting the bride at the altar. She's up there. I'm going to shoot five. I'm going to go pop, 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 pop. I'm going to shoot it 5 or 6 times to make, you know, you wouldn't do that. You would shoot it once.
I would shoot one, maybe two.
And then you'd restage the ring shot so that you get a close-up shot in the
right.
church after. I remember working for my parents' studio mm-hmm. in the film days of wedding photography, and I would always load the backs onto the cameras and carry the bags and the lights. And every single wedding, church wedding, we restaged the ring shot.
rim shot and the candle, Unity candle shot. Those were the two big ones that you restaged.
Because you could not get up there.
Right.
And just take one frame and have it turn out. So rather, you'd stand back, you'd get the big shot of the room and the church or whatever.
With a star filter.
With a star filter, watch all the little candles burst into light.
And I would
so you
got to
put that on. You got to put that on the camera right there?
I didn't put it on the camera. I just held it in front of the lens because it was bigger than the lens. I had a big one. And it would go over any lens I wanted to go over. So I just held it out there and take a couple of shots.
I've heard about your big one.
Like a giant.
It is legendary.
Giant filter.
So you would sell the package. You would pre-sell the package, and it would be like, okay, it's 3 hours. You're going to see 60. Now, you said a sample album or a proof album.
Proof album.
And,
yeah,
and how was that put together? What was that? Was that prints?
Yeah, they were 4x5 prints or 5x5s. I did a lot of square. I mean, I would shoot with Bronica, so everything was square. And I liked square. I love square. I still, even digitally, put online a lot of square images.
I'm a big fan of square myself.
Yeah.
And so, if you put your logo on a square image and a client and tag the client, they use it for the profile pic, your logo shows up.
Yeah, they're not going to crop it out.
Right.
No. Yeah,
right.
Good call on that.
Yeah, good call. Sweet. Yeah. All right. So how would you put the album? How would you the sample album? Because this is back in the day when all the albums were pictures slid into a mat, right?
Yeah, you shoot a wedding on a Saturday. On your stomach was in a knot till Thursday. Thursday, you get your proofs back. You cull through them. You pull out the
best. How did the proofs come back? You got to remember, we've never done this.
5x5 prints.
Okay, so you send off 100 exposures, and it comes back as a stack of
prints in glassines with the negative. The negatives were cut individually.
So each print and its negative
were in a glassine.
I got it. I did this all the time. My parents shot Maya and Bronica weddings, medium format weddings, and my after school job was I'd get out of school and I'd take the bus stop, get off by my parents' studio. Walk a mile to their studio, and I spent like 3-4 hours putting together proof books. So you would take all the 4x5s and put. They had the little white pleather proof books that said our weddings that are probably, you know, let's say 3 tall and 1.5 wide.
Exactly.
And there's like 3 5x4x5s on each side. So and it's just like those old you know, plastic covered. You'd have to take the proofs and slide them all in there.
Now, does the client get the proof book?
Yes.
Okay, so they get the proof book, and then from that, they pick what pictures they want big, like for the album. And then you would print like 8x10s and stuff and create an album.
Their favorite.
Yeah.
Every
10 or
page
20,
had
depending.
One 8x10, 2 5x7s, and 4x4 wallets. Your choice.
Okay.
So you could get your package might come with a 20 or 30 page album, or 20 pages two sides, so 40 pages basically. And, 40-page album, two-parent albums would be like, 2 5x5 albums, your proof book, 16x20, 48 wallets. I mean, that would be a nice package.
But here's the difference to me, because in a way, it was simpler, because your lab
did all the work.
Yeah.
Right.
You sent them the negatives, and they sent you back color balanced.
Yes.
Like, great.
Density,
balance. Exposure.
Right. All you had to do was shoot.
So there was no processing on the part of the photographer. Everything was done by the lab.
No.
Yeah. Right.
I would come back from a wedding on a Saturday night and stop at the studio, drop off equipment, throw the film in a FedEx bag, label it, throw it in a FedEx box down the street and not think about that wedding till Thursday when the proofs came back. And they came back and they made you look good.
But there's the butt clencher. You've only got one copy roll of film and you're putting it in the mail.
Yeah. That's right. That's
so
right.
That's why a lot of people back then, including my parents, used local labs. They could drive to the lab. I remember there were 3 or 4 places that would process, develop, and do proofs for you, whereas sending them off, some people did send them off. But I remember every Monday morning riding with my dad on the way to school, and he would have the film, and we'd take it to the lab and hand it to a person because they wouldn't want to put them in the mail.
What I find really interesting is that people think that in the days of film, it was harder. And I think it was. Shooting was harder because you had to get it right and you had to know it was right because there was no chimping.
You had to get within a couple of stops of getting it right.
Right. You had to know what you were doing because the lab could save you.
It was always better to overexpose than underexpose. You know, expose for the shadows, print for the highlights. That was the motto. And typically you could be 2-3 stops overexposed and your prints came back looking great. So you didn't know how bad you were until we went digital. And then suddenly you were like, holy
wow.
That's
because the lab saved it all for you.
That is an awesome, awesome point because there are a lot of photographers that couldn't make the digital transition.
Right.
Because they were like, oh, digital's too hard. But exposure worked very similarly. It was just that now you got to see right away how much you actually sucked at photography.
And it was reversed because shooting digital was like shooting slides, okay? You don't overexpose a slide. You have to nail the exposure on
a
slide.
It's better to underexpose digital.
Better to underexpose. Yeah. And that's the way it is with digital. It was better to underexpose initially than it was to overexpose. I mean, you think about it. In the film days, high key was all the rage, right? Everybody was white on white. We love this white background.
Because you couldn't screw it up.
You couldn't blow it out. You could, because film would recover all. It would hold all of that detail.
How can it hold the detail? Because, I mean, if you blow it out, you end up basically with a clear piece of film.
No, it wouldn't be like that.
There'd always be some detail there.
There was always detail. You could be three stops overexposed and you still can burn it down. You just keep exposing it to light until the image appears. So high key was all the rage in the film days. The minute the world went digital, what suddenly became the rage? Black on black.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Everybody was black. Why? Because then nobody could nail that exposure on.
Okay. I got to wrap my head around that. Okay, because you know what? I was thinking backwards. I'm thinking that an overexposed picture means that the negative is clear. But no, it's the opposite because it's a negative.
It's dense. It's bulletproof.
Yeah, it's bulletproof. If a black spot on your negative produces a white spot on your picture.
Yes.
So, yes, if you keep that light shining through it long enough, there's some detail in there and it's going to come out.
Most of the time, yeah.
And here's the other thing that gets me is, in many ways, it was easier to shoot a wedding because it was more set shots. Mm-hmm. And you didn't have to get creative with the lighting. You just had to make sure they were lit. I think
there's
a lot more creativity
yeah. today.
Double lighting was very popular.
But despite all of that, back then, the average wedding photographer made more per wedding than many, many wedding photographers make today.
Yeah, well, that's true a lot in part because today I think the prices on weddings have dropped down dramatically.
Well, because the market is so – yes, but that's my point. The market is oversaturated with wedding photographers. But I think it's interesting that I talk to guys like you who charged more in 1985 for a wedding than I charge now for a wedding.
My average – the last year I shot weddings was 07. I only think I did 11 weddings that year. I averaged $7,400 per
That's
wedding.
Crazy. Okay. $7,400 a wedding.
And on 11 weddings, I brought in well over 80 grand, and I walked away from that revenue. I literally shut the door because at the time I had a good family, children, high school, senior market going, and I said, you know what? I'm not. It's not that I didn't enjoy photographing the wedding. I didn't enjoy the post production that was involved with designing these 40-page digital magazine books.
It's you stop being the photographer almost.
Yeah.
Whereas the lab was your. You know, even though you're paying $1, $1.50 every time you push the shutter in the days of film, the lab was the one who did all that work. You got to be the photographer and run your business.
Right.
And the reason I think that weddings are a lot less profitable for people now, in part, is because they spend so much time on the post-processing, whereas it was just a thing you didn't really have to do back then.
Yeah. But
except for putting together proof books, which, by the way, my fingers are still calloused from all the hours as a child.
Oh, you poor thing.
It was like being in a sweatshop.
Yeah, I was down working at Danny's Fried Chicken. So, you know, I'll take your job over my job.
At least you got meals.
I came home with caked flour and batter underneath my fingernails that I couldn't get out. Yeah, grease burns. So, yeah, I'll take your job working at Mom and Dad's cushy studio.
Ooh.
Yeah, but I just think, and you can make, of course, you can make that shooting weddings today, and the many people who make much more than that shooting weddings today, but I think that that the starting point for wedding is so much cheaper now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that back when you were doing it, you were getting a photographer, this is what you were going to pay for a wedding photographer, pretty much no matter who you got. It was the average was going to be much higher. Whereas nowadays, if you're a guy who's getting $7,000, $10,000 a wedding, the people paying that are not getting married at the Lions Club.
There's a guy in my town who does weddings, photography, and video included, all the images, proofs, and an edited video. And I think he starts at like $1,100.
We got to kill that guy.
Yeah.
That guy's got to die.
Yeah.
There's no way he can support himself.
If he's got, see, here's the thing.
He's got to have 100, and he can't do them all.
There's a turn-and-burn business model, whereas if he's not shooting them himself.
Right.
So he's got, at that price, he's got 7 or 8 crews out. Every Saturday.
Right.
So if he hires Kevin or me or you to go shoot a wedding for him to make $300 for 6 hours for your average photographer coming up, that's a pretty decent wage.
That's a good day's
wage. You could make $300 in 6 hours is what a lot of people spend 40 hours making after taxes.
Right.
So, you know, if you work in retail or if you work in fast food or you work in the service industry, to work one day, and that's really attractive to people who maybe want to stay at home during the week with children or something and then work on the weekends. So if this guy pays $300 to 8 people, then he keeps the other $800 times
right.
eight times right. seven or eight crews, and all he has to do is process and shoot it out, which he's probably right. got guys.
Well, I understand that because I mean, we do volume two. I got a couple of photographers who shoot for me, but I still know that in order to make that kind of volume really work for you at a really super low price point, you have to have 4, 5, 6 weddings
Absolutely.
Every weekend because it, in order for you to make enough money that equals one that you shot yourself.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and that's and then that's a huge amount of headache mm-hmm. to try and process all that stuff. Okay, I want to talk about what you're doing now because when I met you. You had a portrait studio, and you still do, but you've moved twice in the time that I've known you. You've downsized your portrait studio.
Twice, yeah.
And now, and I don't know that it was something that you planned to do or you just kind of drifted into it, but now every time I talk to you, you are shooting events. Mm-hmm. And not weddings, but like corporate events. You travel all over the country. You'll be, oh, I'm in yeah. Palm Springs this weekend, or I'm in, you know. So talk to me a little bit about that. Well, how did that happen, and what's that business model?
Well, it's sort of evolved on its own. I think what happens is you get hired by chance to cover a corporate event and you do a good job and that client hires you again. And then you put it online and Google picks it up. And next thing you know, somebody's calling you from Palm Springs saying, can you do this event? I got lucky with a couple of big clients, and it's really luck. It really was. It's nothing, not by design. I wish I could say I had a grand master plan, but I really didn't. I got lucky with a couple of good clients, and they have loved my work, and they have picked me up and dropped me someplace in the country every couple of months. This year, I've done a four-day event in Miami. I did 3 days in Palm Springs, California. I did 3 days in Los Angeles. I just came back from Vegas for 3 days. That was a corporate event.
If you want to see Kevin's adventures on Instagram, it's the hashtag is World's Best Clients, right?
Well, that's
or
one of
today's camera
best,
room.
Today's camera room.
Which I use sometimes, too.
Yes,
right?
I use
and
it,
world's,
too, yeah.
World's Best Clients. It's really funny. I think I started off with World's Home Newsom Studio, home of World's Best Client. That was like one huge
so
hashtag.
Long.
A long hashtag.
So I just started breaking it up. So Newsom Studio, you know, World's Best Clients, today's camera room.
I want to make a point that Kevin is so much the king of corporate event photography that he was just last week, the week before.
I was quite
this is
blown away when I saw this.
He was the official event photographer for Photoshop World.
That really impressed the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't just go out and hire some guy, you know, on the corner for $100 to be the guy who shoots Photoshop World.
No, they're not going to skimp. They're going to want somebody to do a good job. However, to me, if you're the photographer at the photography convention,
right?
The paid photographer right. would be there. Like to me, that I mean, that's a butt clenching job, right there.
It is, but it's also, I think, a big feather in your cap.
It is, yeah. And I
naturally
came with its share of stress as well because I knew what I would be up against if I were to, you know, do a bad job. But I approached it like I do every other event. I went with the equipment I like to take, which really is very simple. I'm 2 cameras, 3 lenses. You know, I've got, like you, the Holy Trinity between 17 and 200. I've got 4 flashes, a Yongyo remote system, 1 light stand, 1 tripod. All my camera equipment goes on as a roll, a carry-on. The only thing I check are my clothes and then my tripod bag, you know, which has a tripod and a light stand in it. I'm very contained. I can walk around that convention with everything I need. I use the spider holster and
right.
the lens pouch to hold the third lens and maybe a water bottle and some spare batteries.
But come on. When you take a picture of Joe McNally,
yeah,
you know Joe McNally is going to look at the picture.
Yeah.
Joe McNally, in his wildest dreams, is never going to look at a picture I take his entire life. Okay? But he's going to look at the picture that you take because it's a picture of Joe McNally.
What about the blackmail pictures you took of him and mailed him? Like, he'll see those. You know, you get the nondescript manila envelope and out a bunch of pictures of you doing something obscene. Like, you could do that.
I could do
then
that.
You could be sure that
That's
he would
see
your
That's
the
only way pictures. That Joe McNally would ever look at anything I've ever shot. Is
they
to blackmail
had, I
him.
Had 2 times at Photoshop World, or actually 3 that I was, I needed to photograph Joe, and they were, one was in the instructor dinner. I was told, take a cab, go to this restaurant, organize, you need Scott Kelby, Joe McNally, Joel Grimes, Ben Wilmore, RC Concepcion were all in one photograph. They just need one shot of these five guys. And of course, I go, and it's a Spanish restaurant. It's beautiful decor, but it's really tight. I mean, you don't walk into a restaurant and say, okay, I'm going to use this wall and commandeer this side right. of the room. You just can't do that. And it was very difficult. But I found a spot, and I got my shot, and then I took a cab back, and I'm, you know, okay, that's fine. Then I find out, okay, now they're having a panel discussion. There's going to be eight photographers up there, top names, okay, Joe McNally, RC. And I don't think RC was there. Julianne Coast, Jim DiVitale, top names.
Photographers who were not only like great photographers, but huge icons.
Huge.
Icons.
If you're a new photographer listening to the podcast, you're like, Scott Kelby basically is Photoshop. Yeah. I mean, you know, he doesn't work for Adobe, but all things Photoshop related, you know, Kelby One.
He is the CEO of Photoshop World, and he also is the editor of Photoshop User Magazine.
And owns Kelby One, which is produces Photoshop Magazine. All time. Yeah, you go on Amazon, look for a Photoshop book, and you're going to find a million books by Scott Kelby.
There's not a bookshop in the world you could walk into and you wouldn't find a book by Scott Kelby. Right. Just to make a point. But the other thing is, this is how influential he is. If Adobe comes out with something and then people are complaining about it, if Scott Kelby like consults Adobe on something, like they're listening. This is a company who
they listen to Scott because Scott says I don't like it. If they think he's going to trash it, it's going to really hurt him.
Just to put a point on how influential and huge these photographers are in the industry that Kevin is now having to hunt down and photograph as the lowly but talented convention.
If I had to photograph those guys as a group, I would shit myself. I would.
The second group was a group of, like I said, these eight guys, and it was immediately following their panel. They had always had a group shot, and it was always lined up against the wall, you know, a foot away from the wall, on camera flash, and it looked horrible. And they made the point of telling me what they did not want, so I had to find a new location. Well, I picked up a hallway that you had an exit sign at the end. Okay, I'll take that out in Photoshop, right? Photoshop world, right?
And that's not going to make you nervous either, by the way, when you have to go do some Photoshop work on the photograph that you're giving to Photoshop.
I'll get to that in a second. What I give to Photoshop, it was really funny. But I had to compose this group staggered. And so I kept seeing in my head, okay, what would Annie Leibovitz do in Vogue magazine with eight women all dressed?
It's like the Royal Shakespeare Company portrait.
Yes. Exactly. This is what I, and so fortunately for me, everybody was dressed in black. Okay, good. That's a great start. It doesn't look like a hodgepodge. You know, they're all dressed in black except for Jeremy Cowart, and somebody had a black shirt they loaned him for the photograph. So he actually changed shirts to be in this picture. I put together a pretty decent staggered group using three chairs and everybody else standing, but I gave them each their own pose. Everybody had their own, and they were all very accommodating, and I didn't expect them to be.
But they should be.
And not one of them was like, Kevin, are you sure you don't want to do it this way?
Yeah, no, not one of them, not one of them.
Now that blows my mind.
But anyway, the shot came off. I took three pictures. That was it. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, that's a wrap. And they were thrilled that it only took a few seconds to do this. You know, I mean, I didn't waste their time. I was like, get it done and move on. But the image came out pretty good. I mean, it's not bad. I look at it now and I say, okay, well, I would have probably moved this person.
Hindsight's
20/20. It's always 20/20 because you can only think so fast, and you've got to get it done. And you've got 30 seconds to take this shot before they start really getting squeamish. But it was very, you know, there was some stress, but it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. As far as what I delivered to Photoshop World, this is the beauty of it. These are the Photoshop and Lightroom gurus that I idolize, okay? What am I going to hand them? My own tweaked JPEGs? No. Here's the cards. You download them. You got the raw files. You guys can do better job with what you pick what you want.
Easiest job ever.
Yeah. Paid well.
The client does the Photoshop work.
That's great.
I'm confident they're not going to make me look bad.
No. You're going to look awesome.
Yeah. So that was it. I left there. I had to go back by. I had to go by their office the following week to pick up the last
their office
two
in
cards.
Tampa, right? Hmm? Are there some office in Tampa?
Oldsmar. They're right just down the suburb. Yeah. They're really 30
That's real
minutes.
Close to us, just for listeners' sake. We record in Tampa.
Right. So photos from here, it's maybe a 15-minute drive.
Yeah, exactly. And so it didn't take long. I went by their office. I got a tour of the place. I had never been there. I got a tour of the place, picked up my cards. We discussed the next shoot, which was Joe McNally in Orlando. day before yesterday.
So they're going to use you again.
I already did. I shot it Friday.
Damn.
And that was a lot of fun. And so we're looking at, you know, they have like 60 one-day seminars a year plus Photoshop World.
Wow.
And they don't want pictures. They don't need pictures of every single one of them. But there are some that they feel are, you know, top-tier events that they know there's going to be a lot of people in attendance, a good speaker, and they would consider bringing me in to do those. I said, fine, I'll take it.
Let me ask you a real question about, because obviously there's nobody who I think would be more competent to do that than you. In fact, I would say this about event photography, because I do a fair amount of it. I have a big event. You all right there, buddy?
I'm sorry. No one?
No one.
If only there was someone else in this room who has shot a lot of events.
I just don't think that, like, come on. I'm going to give Kevin the edge. If this was a celebrity death match,
Here's the thing. I will go head-to-head with Kevin when it comes to, let's take a picture of Joe McNally doing his thing or whatever up on stage. However, if Kevin and I are both there and they're like, hey, here's 16 people. Can you pose them and take a group shot? I'd be like, yes, Kevin, would you come pose these people and take a group? Because that is one area where Kevin absolutely, because I've worked with Kevin and had him come in and do like stuff with me like that. And whenever like this big group shows up, I'm like, oh, Kevin will be happy to take care of you. I send him right to Kevin.
Event photography
because he has so much more
time.
Experience with posing groups and you know, from his portrait background.
Well, before I offend your sweet, delicate little heart there, Boo-Ray, God, your ego is so fragile.
It's so delicate.
I want to talk about the demographic because let's say you've been to pretty much every big photography convention in the U.S. You've been to WPPI.
I've been to WPPI.
Been to
Imaging
USA.
Many years. It's been many years.
Been to Imaging USA.
Imaging several times.
Okay. Photoshop World, obviously. Like
Photoshop World.
Photo Plus, whatever. The big ones that are out there, you've been to most of them, can we say?
Yeah. I would say at least a lot of them that are SPI and... You know,
tell me about the demographic of the ones you've been to, because we touched on that a little bit when we were talking before we started recording, and I really enjoyed this conversation.
The demographic, of course, evolved with the advent of digital, going from, I would say, what was largely a male-dominated industry to more female-dominated. And I think the numbers could probably...
By the way,
that
makes conventions a lot more fun.
for the guys,
instead of being 3,000 just dudes.
Okay.
What's interesting is it's male, female, but the men are all 60,
yes.
And the women are all
35.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I find interesting. You don't meet a lot of young hipster dudes. You meet a lot of young women.
There's some.
If they wanted to meet women, they'd come.
Yeah. The hipster dudes are on stage, like Gary here, and yourself, okay? So it's really funny. Photoshop World, to me, was an eye-opener, because Photoshop World was not just photographers, but it's designers and, you know, web people and other software.
Larger than just
tech.
Photography.
Larger than just photography, but... The demographic, I would say, at Photoshop World is about 7 to 3 male to female. And the men were all my age, literally 50 plus, okay? And they're all carrying backpacks, fanny packs, baseball hats, camera vests.
Gear dorks.
They're gear dorks. They got tripods. They're walking around with tripods. I thought I'd be the only one walking around with a tripod. They've all got tripods and monopods, and they've strapped to themselves. They literally look like they just came off the sidelines of a college football
team. You probably had the least gear.
Yeah. And we really don't get that. Gary and I have talked about that. I don't get that whole go to a convention and then walk around with all your stuff.
Not interested in it at
all.
Not
me, no.
Not interested in it at all.
No.
I was walking around. I was the only guy walking around that actually had a light stand with a light on the end of it.
Right.
And setting it up and then composing a shot and shooting from and lighting from opposite angles. And people were looking at me kind of strange, but the beauty was I was handed 3 T-shirts when I got there, one for each day, that said staff on the back.
Right, because so otherwise they would think you were just a guy taking pictures.
They would think I was just an overzealous old man.
Right.
Okay, and so here at least I had a staff shirt on. Okay, they backed off. He knows what he's doing. He's obviously hired to be here. So nobody bothered me. That was the beauty. I could prance all over the stage behind the speaker. It didn't matter.
I want to speak to your point is that you and I don't want to be that guy.
No.
Because this is what we do all day.
Yes.
Every day.
When I go to a convention, part of the reason I go to the convention is so that I don't have to work.
Right. Exactly. The only time I take my gear is I always take some gear to IUSA because Canon Professional Services is always there.
Yes.
And you can leave your stuff with them at the beginning and they'll clean and check everything and give it back to you at the end. So sometimes I will do that. But I don't want to carry my crap around with me.
No.
Convention is, we take a couple of weeks off a year at least to go to these things. And so this is our vacation time.
Yeah.
In essence. This is personal time that we're taking to go and do photography stuff. And for a lot of people at photography conventions, they're either part-time or they're enthusiasts,
right.
You know, hobbyists.
Right.
And so of course they want to take their stuff with them because this is one of their opportunities to be involved in photography. And the rest of the week they might be an accountant or they might be a school teacher or something like that. I can totally see that, but I still go, what are you going to take a picture of and what are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Ooh, here's a vendor.
What's the intended use?
Yeah.
Like, I could take a picture that is marginally as good with my iPhone 6 of the trade show.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it would be, what's the intended use? Oh, I'm going to put it on Facebook and show all my friends. By the time you raise it down, you took it with your 5DS. I took my iPhone 6. You're not going to see a whole lot of difference.
No.
And so, you know, part of the reason. But that's the crowd. That's the Photoshop world
crowd.
That's
right? The Photoshop world
crowd. But compare it to other things that you've seen, like WPPI and Imaging USA.
Well, I compare it in what?
Demographics.
Men and women. Because Photoshop world is largely men and old
largely
men.
Largely older men versus, you know, IUSA is largely younger women. I mean, that was the biggest eye-opener that I saw. I mean, but, you know, you walk through the expo at Photoshop World and you don't see camera bags and camera straps and frou-frou
baby
stuff,
hats.
And baby hats, yarn hats and things. They don't have any of that stuff. That's not what that's about. It's a whole different thing. There's a lot of software, a lot of books. There's a lot of lighting equipment. You know, Westcott was there. They had a big four shooting base set up.
Oh, yeah. They got a kill at something like that.
And people were just eating it up. And they had some fabulous speakers, two theater and the round spot set up where, you know, Peter Hurley gave a great headshot program. You know, Dorhoff, I can't remember his first name.
We'll just call him John.
I think it was Ron.
I was close.
It was very close. Yeah, I think it's Ron Dorhoff. A lot of good speakers that just did some absolutely beautiful stuff. And all of the programming was very good. A lot of hands-on stuff. They had 10 pre-con workshops that I was tasked with, you know, cover as many of those as you can. Well, five of them were on site and the other five were out in the desert somewhere. You know, I was
running. That's kind of cool because it's in Vegas.
Yeah.
Well, take that and we want to talk a little bit more about the business of event photography. And of course, because I was just thinking about you as I was driving over here about how you're that survivor in the industry. Like you're feinting and dodging and finding the next angle to come at. So, and I was thinking that I remember probably 4 or 5 years ago, I saw you give a program on business headshots, right? And it seems to me now that, like, because I just did the class on Creative Live, whereas business headshot photography was like the least interesting, least sexy thing, and you and I were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You got there before I did, but you and I were doing it as our big money maker, and nobody else was paying attention to it. It was like taking candy from a baby. You could literally just say, hey, you need headshots, come to me. Who does them? I do. I don't shoot babies and weddings, I shoot business headshots.
Yeah.
And now headshots has become
huge.
Like, headshot photography is the new wedding photography. Yeah. It's the new
it's
sexy
the new
thing.
Yarn hat on a newborn.
Right, yeah. It is. But at the same time, it's something that's very, very relevant. Like, people need it. And I don't know
people need them more than ever before because it's not just a question of, I'm a realtor, so I need it for my business cards.
But
need
that
it
market
Facebook.
Is getting oversaturated just like
LinkedIn.
Wedding photography
yes,
did.
It's getting to be too many people. Everybody and their brother, I'll come and take a picture for $25.
And Kevin's already moved.
Yeah,
Kevin's
he's already moved on.
Moved on. This is the guy.
That's my point. He's always one step ahead. He quit weddings before weddings became unprofitable.
Right.
You know, he moved on from headshots before they became unprofitable. He's always one step ahead. You're Wiley is what you are.
Wiley E.
You are Wiley.
I still do headshots. I mean, I still do plenty of those.
But you've already put your foot into the next market.
I've already found my next market, and I've started pushing it, and it's starting to pay off.
One of the things I do want to do, which we don't do this enough when we have people on the show, and I think maybe we should, is if you can remember them all, give me a quick listing of your accolades and awards and, like, you know, you're a master photographer from PPA. Because we don't do that enough. We have people on the show, and I think, you know, people, they go through a lot to get to reach this level, and not often enough do you give people a chance to say, this
we
is
what I am.
We
have people on the show who maybe, we do have photographers that are internationally known, sort of. We had, like, Jerry Melissa-Gionis, and we had Jen Hillingay, and we have some other people coming up on future episodes that are big names in the industry, but we have guys like Kevin who are phenomenally accomplished photographers, been around forever, tons of awards and accolades, but maybe not known as a household name.
But Kevin, you're a master photographer with the PPA.
Yes.
Okay. You're a craftsman with the PPA.
Yes.
How many years in the PPA?
20. I just got my 20-year pin.
20-year pin in the PPA. Then, and what about Florida, in the Florida Professional Photographer Association?
FDPE, FSA,
well, no one knows what that is,
all
Kevin.
The awards.
No
just
one knows what that is.
All the degrees.
The same equivalent,
the equivalent
in your master photographer.
Master, craftsman,
master
CPP.
Teacher. A certified professional photographer.
Yeah.
I mean, so you pretty much have covered all the bases.
API, which is approved photographic instructor through PPA.
I don't even know. I never even heard of that.
SPF, which is not sun protection factor. It's Southeastern Photographic Fellowship, or it might even be SFP. I don't remember which direction
he's got
is,
so but, many letters right. after his name.
But I think it's important for us to ask him what they are, because he. I think when you have a career that is long and that you have achieved all of these things, that you know. You don't get to wear your medals enough.
The point is that you're plugged into the industry to the point where you are the thing that that I really admire about a lot, some other photographers that I know, is that although you've accomplished all these great things, you're not out there being super flashy in the industry. You're making money and making a living over a 25, 30-year right. career, whereas other people have been in it and still trying to figure it out. Whereas the point is that you are what most photographers neglect, which is a business person.
Yeah, and probably more business than I am a photographer.
I'm just saying that you can be standing next to Kevin, and there can be some guy on stage giving a thing, and he's a PPA master, and he's a craftsman, and he's a blah, 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 and you're standing there with Kevin watching a thing, and what you don't realize is that the guy standing next to you has just as many accolades and awards and a lifetime career as the guy you're watching, because Kevin's just, oh, he's just Kevin, but you don't realize that Kevin's done all that stuff too, you know, that Kevin could be up there or should be up there.
So here's how I want to finish out. Because we're on the end of our time.
Wait, there's one other question I have.
Well, go ahead, because I got the better question.
Well, okay.
So
well,
you go first. We'll save the best till last.
And because you were talking about the business side of it, and real quick, mm-hmm. and we don't have to go into details, but I'm sure there are people who are saying, okay, he's doing events. How do you price something like that?
Really good question. Yeah. That was better than my question.
It's based on their end needs. What are their needs? What kind of hours are they looking for? Most conventions that I shoot, I might only cover, you know, 3 or 4 hours the first day I get there, and then I might cover 12 to 15 hours the next day.
Because one of the things that we didn't touch on is that you've said to me, well, I got to go to Palm Beach and cover this command. It's the mm-hmm. best gig ever. And I'm like, really, what's your day like? Well, I get up at 7 a.m. and I get on a bus and I cover this and I cover this. I'm back at the hotel at 9 o'clock at night. I spend 3 hours processing, get it back out to them by midnight. And I'm going, are you kidding me? That's not a great day. That's a long day.
It's a very long day. I've had days where they say, okay, we need you to cover yoga on the beach at 6 a.m. sunrise. And by the way, the party doesn't end till midnight, and we need all these images in New York by 1 a.m. So you are literally two or three times during the course of the day, I stop, download, process, upload to Dropbox, send the link to New York, and then go
and
to the
next
event.
And you're typically shooting this by yourself.
I'm always shooting it by myself.
So you don't take anybody with you.
I don't take anybody.
He won't take his good friend who's brought him on deals many times with him when he has to go to Miami or West Palm.
Because he doesn't need you.
No, he doesn't.
I'm a fly on the wall. Two flies on the wall right. cause a scene.
There you go.
And cost more money.
And yeah. cost more money. I'd rather have it all for me.
Absolutely.
And do you price it out like a commercial photographer where it's just a day rate?
A lot of them, I give them an event rate. I don't tell them it's a day rate because then they want to trim a day.
Right. Okay. No. So you say if you want me to come shoot your convention, it's X amount of dollars.
Yeah. I need 100% expenses, which means airfare, hotel, cab fares, baggage fees, shuttle transfers. Every time I eat a meal that's not already provided by the event, I'm going to put a receipt in my pocket. Every time I pull my wallet out, I'm putting a receipt in, and you're going to get all those receipts at the end of the job. It's not going to cost me a cent for 3 days, 4 days, whatever it is. Plus, this is my fee, period.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you color-corrected, density-corrected, high-res JPEGs in a Dropbox.
Do you worry that they take advantage of your time when you're there because it's a one rate? Because
no,
they do the 6 a.m. to midnight?
I mentally check out with regard to that. I am at their disposal. I will work my butt off right. from 6 a.m. till midnight. I don't care if it's an 18-hour day. I'm in the Energizer Bunny. They will say to me, have you had a break today? And I'll just kind of laugh, and I'll say, yeah, I went to the bathroom twice.
I think you're one of those people that is like me, and used not to be this way, but you're one of those people that once the deal is done, mm-hmm. I'm going in with a positive attitude and do the best job I can.
That's right.
I'm not going to be that guy who goes in and in the back of his mind is like, I'm going to get paid enough for this. And you know, people who grumble about a job after they've already agreed to do the job. Once you agree to do the job, get on board and do the job.
Amen. Absolutely.
Now, it's too late now to sit around and complain about, you know, these people are taking advantage. Then you shouldn't have taken the job, dude. Once you're on board, knock it out of the park, and I don't give a crap if you know in your heart that they're not paying you enough money or whatever. Knock it out of the park, and then next time, you know, you'll, you know, maybe you'll be able to do a better job charging before you, you know, or figuring out your rate.
Right, right.
But once you're on the job, get on the job.
If you're complaining, you didn't charge enough.
Yeah. I think that's all amazing information, and thanks for sharing that, because I know this is sort of trade secret stuff for you. So if you want to know what's going to be the next thing in the industry that you can make money doing as a working photographer, pay attention to what Kevin Newsom is doing. But I wanted to ask you this, because you do base your business not around what you're passionate about shooting. You base your business around what you're going to make a living shooting, which I think is really, you know, I think that's an important distinction.
And Kevin, from the moment I met him, tells anybody who asks him, people say, Kevin, what do you shoot? And Kevin says, whatever will put money in my pocket.
Absolutely.
Is what I shoot.
So here's what I want to get to. You've spent your career shooting the thing that's going to make you a living. Mm-hmm. So if someone, a distant relative who you never met, died and left you a fortune, mm-hmm. and you never had to work again. Mm-hmm. And photography was just suddenly became your hobby. Mm-hmm. What would you shoot?
Would you shoot, or would you put that damn camera away?
Oh, I would not put the camera away. Heck no. I would be shooting landscapes in Italy.
Right on.
Because I want to live in Italy. I want to retire. I want to ride my bicycle to the cafe and eat cheese, drink wine, play checkers with old men who have no clue what I'm saying, that don't speak English. And literally, I would bungle up in Italy somewhere in a small village where nobody speaks English, and I would shoot landscapes and postcards. And
but it's not that you really want to shoot landscapes as much as you want to live in Italy.
I want to have fun with my – I want to live in Italy more right. than I want to shoot landscapes. Yeah. But that's what I would not put the camera away. I would absolutely have to have a camera. I don't care. You put me on a deserted island.
That is what I like about it. Yeah. It's like you can still love photography.
Yes.
But you can still be practical about how you make a living doing photography,
right.
which is really cool.
Right.
So – as we wrap up, and Kevin, we'd like to invite you to come back and be on another episode, because we're going to do a whole episode just on listener questions that you guys send. And one very lucky listener is going to get to ask their question live on the show. Well, live pre-recorded, but live on the show.
Live on tape.
So I wanted to mention one thing, since this episode is coming out today or Monday or whenever the episode is. The day this comes out, they will be right up. It'll be just a week before.
To the listener, every episode came out today.
It did, right. But this episode comes out a week before Focus 2015 in Orlando.
Right.
So I do want to mention that, which is the annual convention of the Florida Professional Photographers, Focus 2015, at the Florida Hotel and Conference Center. And it's right attached to the Florida Mall. So great opportunity if you're a photographer and you haven't taken your summer vacation with your family yet. Come hit up Orlando. You can go get your photo nerd stuff on while your family does a little theme park stuff. Meet up with them later. Get drunk with me and Boo Ray at the bar, which is going to be great. And Kevin will be there.
I will.
I think the website for that is ruinfocus.com. And thank Kevin. I want to thank you for being
thank
here
you
with
much,
us.
Kevin.
Thank you.
We're going to have you back again for the questions episode.
Wonderful.
And Boo Ray, do what you do.
I don't know what that means exactly. Oh, talk?
First of all, but as an aside, when somebody says, you do you, I want to hit him in the face with a sock full of nickels.
Yeah.
I think that's the
you?
Most obnoxious what phrase in the world.
You
yeah,
do you.
You do you, man. Like, I just want to hit him in the face with a sock full of nickels, right in the face. I want to break something. I want
you
to hear
issues.
Something break. Because I just think it's a terrible... Anyway, sorry if that's your
You can join us online at photobombpodcast.com. You can find me at BooRayPerryPhotography.com, or actually BooRayPerry.com, either one of them, but BooRayPerry.com. You can find Gary at HughesFioretti.com.
Well said.
You can find Kevin Newsom at
NewsomStudio.com.
Focus is next week, and that's RUinFocus.com.
August 29th, 30th, and 31st.
And you can look that up. Also, just look up Florida Professional Photographers Association. You'll be able to find all the information that you need there. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. Just look for us by our names, and you should be able to find us. And you can also send us questions at questions@photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you next time.
See you later.